for the tech entrepreneurs, I usually say there's just two or three things you need to do. One is, again, don't fall in love with the idea. Fall in love with the problem and the customer. Focus on that. And the second thing is, don't run out of money.
Welcome to Learning Life, where top experts share their business knowledge and personal journeys each week.
And the thing that I've realized, from the CEO to the NFL football player to the janitor, we're our toughest critics and we're hardest on ourselves.
I wanted to bring education to the market. I wake up in the morning and I am constantly learning.
The only way to grab somebody's attention is with a story.
Happy learning.
And now your host, John Toda.
Welcome back to Learning Life with John Toda. My guest today is Bill Flynn. Bill is a coach and speaker and the chief catalyst at Catalyst Growth Advisors. He's also the author of Further Faster, which showcases a growth framework that can help businesses understand the small operational things they can tweak now to help scale their business the best way. And in over three decades of helping to launch and run over 20 startups and scale-ups, Bill has a lot of expertise to share with us. Bill talks about the things you need to do as an entrepreneur every day to be prepared when things inevitably go wrong in the market, as we're all experiencing right now in the aftermath of COVID-19. So I'm excited to have him with us today. Bill Flynn, welcome to Learning Life.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
So I love to start with everybody on their background and learning a little bit about your journey, how you got to the point that you are today, and some of that experience that you had working with those early startups and scale-ups. How did you get into that space in the first place? What was your background?
Oh, great question. So my background is that I had an uncle who was very kind to me. And when I was 22 or 23 and I graduated from college, he helped me get a job. I was actually working at Papagino's at the time, which is a pizza place here in New England, running shifts and things. And I certainly knew I didn't want to do that. So he was in investment banking in New York, and then he became a venture capitalist here in the Boston area. And he just got me some interviews, and I found some companies and found that I really liked it. It got introduced to a whole bunch of people. And then my first startup was really, it's kind of a startup. It was a company called Dragon Systems, which is a speech recognition company. It actually was originally what Siri was. It's changed since then. And got introduced to a bunch of people. And then, you know, as you probably in your career, right, you meet people and then they help you to get to your next place, not knowing you're going to get there. So I really started doing startups on the internet in 1995, and I just loved it. I loved the whole clean sheet of paper kind of thing, trying to figure it out. I love puzzles. And so that's sort of where I got my start.
That's such cutting edge. When you think about, I don't know the exact years when you were there working with Dragon, but it was really cutting edge technology, voice recognition, like you said, Siri long before it was ever around. What was it like being at a company that was so cutting edge, innovating like that while the technology was still in such a developmental stage?
Yeah, it was really cool. I'm a geek. I love new stuff and I love technology. So that was really wonderful for me. You know, I was there. I started in 1991, so it was really early on. Microsoft was my customer, my personal customer. The Microsoft sound system was our technology, and I worked with the guys there. And it's fun to be on the leading edge. I'm not a big fan of the bleeding edge at this point because I'm a sales guy primarily. So if you're on the bleeding edge, sales is much harder, as is marketing. It's so fun. And the best part, I got to tell you, John, of doing, especially with Dragon, was it was probably the most fulfilling sales job I ever had, because the first users of our technology were people with disabilities. So we were able to literally change lives. You know, we would get people calling us up and sending us letters, and they'd be crying and saying, "You changed my life, and now I can do something, I can contribute." There's nothing better than that. So I probably got a bug from that. And then, you know, the internet took off, in 94, 95. And I luckily got in on the front end of that on a company called Open Market, which was considered Netscape of the East. You know, we were $5 million in size, and we had a $1.2 billion IPO, which was just insane. So wow. It was just kind of fun, all that stuff.
Has your experience primarily been helping to scale up and just improve the operational capabilities of primarily tech startups and scale-ups, or has it been across different industries as well?
So in my startup days, it was all tech. I live in Boston. You know, we've got Harvard, MIT. There's a lot of people here. I think MIT is the largest contributor to startups every year. even better than Stanford. Just being around those kinds of people, that's sort of how I get into it, was high tech. Now, as a coach, I don't really care who they are. I've been a coach for about 4 years, and so I've got people who, you know, are not tech at all. And, I have an apparel company and others that don't do anything technology-wise. But that, the technology side, working in them was really what appealed to me. And I'm not a founder. I'm not an idea guy, right? You're a founder. You probably have 10 ideas. You probably had 10 ideas in the last 15 or 20 minutes. I don't have them. I always describe myself sort of jokingly as I'm the BASF of startups. If you remember BASF, right? It's like, we don't make the carpet, we make it whatever, smell better. Mm-hmm. I'm the guy that comes in and makes the company better, meaning we actually cross that chasm. We find the larger set of customers. That was my job. And I got pretty good at it in the first 3 or 4, because I think that mentality I have, which was sort of this beginner's mindset, I always wanted to try to make things better, improve it. I was looking to help people's lives be better. It wasn't just about the money to me. And I think that had a big factor in my ability to do well. As I said, I was, I did 10 of them, but I was 5 for 6 for a while, which is a phenomenal hit rate. And usually it's 10%. So 83 or 85% is a pretty good hit rate.
Yeah. And I think you hit the nail on the head. The difference between having a good idea and running a successful business is that operational piece in the middle that, typically, the idea person may not be the best one to do that. So in your experience, because obviously you've been doing this for 3 decades and across a lot of different companies in both your consulting and your startup experience, what are some of the things that you see as being the largest or the persistent challenge with these idea entrepreneurs, the ones that really come up with groundbreaking, innovative ideas, but then they just don't tweak the right dials operationally? Are there some things you've seen over the years that consistently become a problem all the time?
Yeah, because of my background, and I'm generally pretty well known in the Boston area, so I get people calling me founders all the time saying, would you just chat with me? Give me, they always say, what's the one piece of advice you give? And to me, it's always the same, which is don't fall in love with your idea. It's very rare that your original idea is the thing that catches fire, because people don't really care what you do. They care about what you do does for them. And if you can get there, then you'll be okay as an entrepreneur. But most entrepreneurs have this problem that they fall in love with their idea and they want to tell everyone how great it is and how wonderful it is because they're so passionate about it. But again, people don't really care what it does. And we want to explain it's our baby, right? So we want to talk about how great our baby is, right? We talked earlier, we have kids and that kind of stuff. And you talk about your kid, right? You tell them how great they are and how talented and all those wonderful things. But people don't want to hear about that when you're an entrepreneur. They want to know what is what you do for me? And I try to live that in my own company. If you look at my website, it's, people say, what do you do? And I say, I take the guesswork out of growth. And then that's not, I'm a coach, right? And I teach a framework, but I don't say I teach a framework. I said, what I do is this. And if an entrepreneur can figure that out, what is what you do for me? And you speak the language of the customer, you're in a much better position to be successful. You can do it. It's just a lot harder when you're trying to convince people how smart you are and how great your idea is, as opposed to them saying, where have you been all my life? I've been trying to solve this problem for years and you've come in and done it. So that's usually where I start.
Yeah, and I think it's a great point because I, being a technology founder myself, it's very easy in that world to fall in love with the innovation that you've created. But then you realize if you're going to play in a space where there's big competitors, any feature that you fell in love with could be replaced with enough engineers and hours in the day. They can copy anything you've got. Mm-hmm. And so it's really how it actually results in the benefit, how you position it for the end users. I know it took me a while to learn that too. I used to love selling to features and then realized that doesn't really, it really end in the ultimate goal. What are some of the things that have worked over the years? Some of the things, lessons you've learned, what are some of the things you see that the best businesses are doing to tweak the dials, to move the needle the right way?
Yeah, so let's make sure I'm going to give my perspective. A startup is not a real business in my estimation. A startup is a temporary organization trying to find a business model. Once you've found a business model and some repeatability and scalability, then you're a real business. Then you actually have to revisit all your key decisions and make sure that they're still the right ones. Because as I'm sure you know, being a tech entrepreneur, a lot of the stuff you did were decisions you made that you probably regretted later because you made them at the time for really good reasons, which was to survive or just to keep going or to reach payroll if, you know, if you got that desperate. But some of those decisions are not things that you want to do moving forward. So I have a completely different set of things that a startup can and should do versus what a real business does once they've gotten past that business model stage. So for the tech entrepreneurs, I usually say there's just two or three things you need to do. One is, again, don't fall in love with the idea. Fall in love with the problem and the customer. Focus on that. And the second thing is, don't run out of money. Those are really your only two jobs. Everything else doesn't matter until you've figured out a business model. Then you move to the next stage, which is, okay, we've got this, we've got a business model, there's some repeatability and scalability, but as you probably know, your first customers are not necessarily what your next set of customers are. They're just as crazy as you. And that's usually a small set, right? They're called neophiliacs, which I love that word. And they love the new, right? They are okay with the thing not working very well yet. And they'd like to be part of the process, but that's typically a very small fraction of your potentially your total market. And if you can figure out how to get it from that neophiliac stage to the next stage, then you're much better. And the story I tell there is of my own experience.
Hey listeners, are you looking to create engaging learning that takes place anywhere on any device at any time? Look no further than eLearning Brothers, the leader in immersive e-learning solutions. What started out over a decade ago with amazing e-learning templates has now grown into a learning powerhouse that can help you with every aspect of your learning and development programs. Whether you need the tools to create and enhance your own learning programs or a partner to develop custom content and deliver it through an engaging learner experience, they'll help you rock it all. Right now, virtual learning is critical to all of our growing businesses, and the team at eLearning Brothers is literally the best in the business. Check out eLearningBrothers.com today and see all the ways they can help you become an e-learning rock star. Now back to the show.
I worked for a company called LiveVault in the early noughts, right? I think it was 2003, 2004 when I started to work there. And they were a data backup company. So tape as a data backup medium was starting to go away. And we had this you know, SaaS model. It was called an ASP at the time. And it was in the cloud, and we would take your data and we would store it for you. And you didn't have to do anything about tapes. And so when I started, the first day I started, I was brought in to replace another guy who didn't quite have the experience I had in the direction they wanted to go. So I said, you know, here's my deal. Here's my process is I like to come in and talk to your best customers, and I like to interview them to understand why they work with you. So they said, great. And I said, you know, if you just give me the name of your top 20 or so clients, you know, people who use your product, that would be terrific. And they did. And I said, but before I talk to them, I asked the head of marketing and actually the head of the second in command. I said, why do you think our customers buy from us? And they said, well, it's insurance. They buy us as an insurance provider, basically, right? Because, hey, people don't, if they lose their data, they want to get it back. So they're willing to pay a little bit every month to us. So if that ever happens, they can get it back quickly and hopefully as much, if not the entire amount that they lost. And I said, oh, that's a really good answer because I've heard worse answers because it was about the customer. And I said, great. So I went off and I did my interviews, and it took me a couple of weeks because it takes a little while to schedule them and such. And I wrote up my report and I said, here's the deal. When I asked people what is the most valuable thing that they got from using our service, they didn't say insurance. They said, set it and forget it. So I said, you're selling insurance and they're buying time. So we switched our marketing. I told my sales guys, whenever you're talking to a prospect, say those five words. Our best customers love us because you can set it and forget it. You push four buttons and you never have to worry about it again. And from that point on, we beat every month, every quarter, and Iron Mountain bought us for 10x revenue like 18 months later because we figured it out. We focused on the customer, what they cared about, and then we spoke their language. We didn't actually have to change the product that much. We just had to change the way we talked about it. And then people said, that's exactly what I'm looking for. How did you know? I'm a super busy small to medium business owner, and I hate doing this tape thing. It sucks, right? It's a pain in the ass. I get worried that I'm going to lose my data, and then the tape's going to degenerate, and they had all these problems. And we just took that away from them so they could focus on other stuff. So that's sort of the world that I come from, and that's sort of that jump from startup to scale up, if you will.
Yeah, and I think that's hard for people, right, to make that transition out and understand that there's certain part of your product offering that is just expected that you don't get credit for, right?
Yeah. So I'm a big fan of jobs to be done. As a, I don't know if you're familiar with that particular theory.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that's really all it is right? People hire your product to do something for them. And then when it no longer does it or someone else does it a little bit better, they just fire you and move away. And my example is always, you know, it started, let's think about the transistor radio, which when then went to some sort of MP3 thing, which then went to the iPod, which was a better version of that. And now we're at Spotify, right? The job is the same. I want to listen to music. We've now broken the job into different things, right? So like Pandora is about what mood am I in and have it choose the songs for me. And then Spotify is about creating channels. So you can decide what you want to listen to, when you want to listen to it. You know, if you're at the gym, and when I'm at the gym or I'm working out, I'm listening to 80s rock most of the time, right? But if I'm hanging out, I'm listening to acoustic music like James Taylor and that kind of stuff. That's the job that I hired that thing to do. And when you do it better, then I'm going to use you more, right? I use Pandora at the gym and I use Spotify when I'm hanging around the house. It's kind of interesting.
Let's talk a little bit about your book, Further Faster, because I think, as I was saying in my introduction, that a lot of what the way you kind of categorized it for me is that it's about preparation, being prepared in your business, doing the right things every day so that when things go wrong, you put yourself in the best situation possible. And we're dealing with, you know, obviously with everything that's going on in the market, in the economy, and it's impacting some businesses much more than others.
Yep.
This is a really important message. Tell us a little bit about the book and really how you're positioning that to help people with what's going on right now.
Sure. So here's the way I look at the problem, right? Is most businesses fail. If you look at the businesses statistics from the Small Business Administration, you have about a 50-50 chance of getting to 5 years. If you get to 5 years, you think, okay, great, I made it. You didn't. You actually have about a 35% chance of getting to 10, and you actually have a 25% chance of getting to 15. So it gets worse. The longer you go, the less likely it is that you stay in business. And I think one of the things, for the most part, at least the research I've done on success and failure, is, you know, I sort of have this what do we do wrong list, and we do a lot of things wrong for the most part as entrepreneurs. We do change wrong, we do vision wrong, we do people, teams, feedback, innovation, strategy, decision making, hiring, and meetings wrong, for the most part. Why is that? Because no one ever taught us how to do all those things, right? I actually looked it up a few months ago. I looked up, tell me a class, is there somewhere out there that's teaching how to be a CEO, right? How to run an entire organization of people. And there's no real class. I think there's like maybe one or two. A lot of them say it's about a CEO, but then they focus on a particular aspect of it, right? Maybe like finance or marketing or innovation or whatever. But there's no this, how do we do the whole thing, right? How do we get all these people who are different and crazy and irrational and impulsive to all get on the same page? That's not something we teach. And I think that there are three or four reasons why I think. One is that there's a meaningful gap between what science knows and what business does, which is why I think we do a lot of the things wrong. We think we're doing them right because that's what we were taught. But if you have a 25% chance of lasting 15 years, there's probably something you were taught that's wrong because most of those people aren't surviving. So, you know, maybe there's a different and a better way. And I focus on, my book is about the few things that truly matter, right? I think few things truly matter, either in business or in life. But those that do matter tremendously. They have an outsized impact on your life and your business. Leaders do not spend enough time there. They rely too much on luck, effort, timing, and force of will to achieve quote unquote success. And those generally don't scale profitably. You run out of room. You run out of time in a day. You run out of the key people that you focus on. So that's what my book focuses on. It really focuses on three things that you need to do. One is that you have to remember that performance is a team sport and your job as a leader is to create team leaders. The second thing is that strategy and execution are inexorably and inextricably connected. You need to make sure you have a decent strategy and a great way to execute it because it's an ongoing thing. This is Simon Sinek's Infinite Game, right? His latest book. That's basically what it is. It's strategy and execution working together and it never ends. And then lastly is cash should be your primary financial growth metric. Not revenue, not profit, because growth sucks cash. Cash is an antecedent to growth. You have to have it in front of it. And one of the problems we're having today is that COVID isn't really changing the world that much, except in some specific areas, certainly medically, et cetera. From the standpoint of business, it's actually accelerating things that were already happening. those things that were working well are doing even better, and those things that aren't working well are just accelerating to end. It's very unfair. I think there are some really great companies that are doing great things, and unfortunately, they're not being treated fairly by this. One of my customers is that they're a study abroad company, and they've done lots of great things. They have money in the bank, and they treat their people really well, and they understand strategy and execution and all that kind of stuff. But no one's traveling, so they're not going to send a kid abroad for probably a year, maybe a year and a half. That's pretty devastating. I don't care. It's pretty hard to put two years of cash in the bank and feel like you're doing the right thing. So that's at a really high level. That's what my book is about.
Yeah, I think it's exactly because of what we're going through in these times too. It's that a lot of those things you forget about, and I think it is to some extent some of it is common sense. But when you're racing and trying to get sales and make things happen, and you're pivoting and adapting all the time as an entrepreneur, you forget about some of those fundamentals that you just recapped. And it's good to have that reminder. And also, I thought your one line was really interesting: what science knows and what business does, because it's true. When you start to do research, if you really took that scientific perspective, you'd see, well, there is a bit of a science to running a business. And if you do these things and you follow those proper practices, you're more likely to be successful. And like you said, the odds are against you as a business owner. So whatever you could do to move the odds a little bit more in your favor, even if it's a few percentage points, makes a big difference in the end, right?
I agree. Yeah. And most people aren't doing it the right way. So even if you don't do all of them right, but you just do some of them, you're actually at an advantage because most people aren't doing these things well. So just doing a few of them can make a huge, can make a big difference. You don't have to do them all right. You just have to do some of them better.
Right, right. And just trying to move the needle in the right way. And I just want to recount a couple of the points you said earlier, because I think they're so important for people to remember. Like, fall in love with the problem and the customer, not the product. I think that's really important too when you're thinking about it. It's like the problem you're solving, because the way you're solving, and I think this is kind of what you're getting to with that also, is the way you're solving the problem may change, it may evolve, it may get better, but what you really fell in love with in the first place was that problem that you're trying to fix. And, you know, and I think you've come back to it a numerous times already, is don't run out of money. Right. And now it's particularly now you're seeing it. It's like, okay, the businesses that haven't focused on just revenue and growth, but were focused on cash in the bank. That's at the end of the day, I think it's an important point. You said you're always looking for what are the KPIs for my business? What's the most important indicator to keep an eye on? At the end of the day, right, it's cash in the bank.
Agreed. I actually recommend all my CEOs to get a weekly, if not more than weekly, cash flow forecast. And it's four things. It's just, how much did we start with at the beginning of the week? How much did we end at the end of the week? How much came in? How much went out? And most of the time, you're just going to throw that away. But once in a while, you're going to see something that changes and you're going to ask what happened. And you'll be in front of the problem as opposed to, you know, trying to scramble to fix the problem.
Yeah, it's funny. For years, I had a money in, money out report, which was just on a spreadsheet. And, you know, at some point it gets too complicated and you can't do it in that way anymore. But right from the early days, it's as simple as how much money's coming in and how much is going out, right?
Yeah. How much do we start with? How much do we end with, right? If we're continuing to end with less and less money, something's going on. And it may be something that you say, well, that's on purpose. We decided to invest and that's okay. But if you didn't make that decision, then that's not the direction your company should be going, right? Something's probably wrong.
Right, right. And so now tell us a little bit about the book, because I think that the message and the work that you've done over the years and the research after three decades of working with companies is so valuable. How, for our listeners who are interested in learning more about the book, where can they find Further Faster and get a copy?
Yeah, John. So I wrote the book not to make money, and most business books don't make any money. So that's probably a good decision on my part. So of course it's on Amazon. I have a Kindle, a paperback, and it's also on Audible. I actually got an award-winning narrator to narrate it, which is pretty cool. It's also on my website. It's free on my website. If you just want to download the PDF, then download the PDF. That's terrific. If you have 15 bucks or whatever, just $9-$10 to spend, then great. But I'd rather have you read it and try to have it help you than to make it a barrier. And, you know, I come along with the book. The book is not only, it doesn't sit by itself. There's a web page on my website that goes with the book that has exercises to do as you move through the book. I think there are 25 different exercises that you can do as you read the book. And that's what most people do. They read it, they read like a few, a chapter or two, and then they go to the exercise and then they do it. And then they go back to the book because it's in a bit of an order. You don't have to go in the order that the book is, but it goes in an order from people to strategy and execution, and then lastly, cash.
Oh, very cool. And the website for everyone, it's catalystgrowthadvisors.com, right?
That's it.
So everyone, if you are interested in learning more about it, you can get a free version of the book in PDF. You can certainly buy, paper copies. You can order through the website as well. But definitely check out Further Faster. Go to catalystgrowthadvisors.com. You can learn more about Bill there, as well as the book and the work that they've been doing. And the resources sound like you've got a ton of resources there that people can access. Are those free on the website as well?
They are free.
Very cool. Very cool. So, Bill, thank you so much. I think with the message that you have, particularly right now, when people are trying to find any way that they can tweak the dials a little bit to extend the runway, to keep more money in the bank, to be able to stretch it through some tough times now, I think it's super valuable advice right now. Thank you for making the time to be here with us.
Great. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
And to all of our listeners, thank you for being here every week. As you know, we have a new episode that comes out every Tuesday. So wherever you're listening, be sure to subscribe, leave us comments. We'd love to hear from you guys. And until next one, happy learning.